Good day, I'm Jackie Judd with Health on the Hill. Today, a reporter roundtable to discuss health care reform as Congress returns from its July 4th recess. Joining me today, as always, Mary Agnes Carey of Kaiser Health News. We also welcome Carrie Bodoff-Brown of Politico and Jeffrey Young of The Hill. Welcome to you all. Mary Agnes, the first question goes to you. The Senate Help Committee is coming back from recess with a new estimate of what its bill would cost from the Congressional Budget Office. What are the new estimates, and why was it important?
It's important to them because the number of the new estimate was far lower than the number of a previous estimate. The estimate released late last week put the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, as you mentioned, the Help Committee bill, at about $600 billion over the next decade. That would include a public plan option. It would include an employer mandate. It would cover about 21 million Americans now that currently don't have health insurance. A previous estimate a few weeks ago had a much higher price tag at about $1 trillion, picking up about 16 million of the uninsured. Now, members of the Help Committee said on Friday their hope is once what they've done is combined with what the Senate Finance Committee is expected to do on health care, that you'll have health insurance covering about 97 million Americans who, rather 97% of the Americans who currently don't have insurance, that they'll have health insurance. But the problem is that as part of this assumption, they're assuming that you could have a Medicaid expansion to as high as 150% of the federal poverty level, and it doesn't look at this point that Senate finance is going to go that high. So we'll have to see how this plays out in the next few weeks.
Jeff, when those first numbers came out from the CBO, it was disastrous because the impression was enormous sums of money would be spent, and at the end of the day, not that many more people would have insurance who don't now. So what's the political spin here? Why was it important to get that new estimate?
Well, you're right. If you take $1 trillion or so dollars and divide it by 16 million people, it's a pretty hefty price tag per person, and it makes it look like a terrible bill. So right away, you've got the perception that, hey, we've now made this thing cheaper, and look, we've also managed to cover all these new people, not even counting what they might do with Medicaid in the Finance Committee. So right away, that looks better. And I think it's also important to point out on the policy side why this can look good for them is how they did it, at least one part of it. By writing in this employer mandate thing, it locks in people who already have coverage at work and would require almost all companies, I guess 25 workers is the cutoff. If you have more than 25 workers, you have to provide it. What that does politically, too, is if this were in the final bill, if this were in the law, it would preserve the coverage that middle-class workers already have, which they say in every poll they're mostly or very satisfied with, which would give some real weight to what President Obama says when he tells people that if they like what they have, they can keep it. In the case of this bill, the employers wouldn't have a choice but to let them keep what they already have. So that could go a long way to reassuring middle-class voters that this bill is not going to upend what they already use.
Mm-hmm. Carrie, during the congressional recess, lawmakers from both houses heard from constituents about health care reform. You spoke late last week with Senator Charles Grassley of Iowa, who is the leading Republican on Senate finance. What did he have to say about what he's hearing and where he thinks things stand at the moment?
He had numerous town halls across Iowa. This is traditionally what he does when he goes home for the breaks. And almost every town hall, he heard a lot about health care. And it really, he said, kind of ran the spectrum of people who are concerned and really want something passed, concerns about a bipartisan bill, concerns about power grabs of the government, about the government messing up what they have in Iowa. So he really heard a broad spectrum of concerns. I tried to press him a little bit to see whether there was something specific or overwhelming that he heard that would change his strategy or gives him pause about what's going on in Washington. He really didn't let on much about that. But I think what he heard last week will inform him coming into this week because he's a key member of the Senate Finance Committee. Everybody's looking to him to see which way he moves in the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, in the next 5 weeks, really. A lot of speculation that as the highest ranking Republican still involved in the process, it's going to become increasingly more difficult for him to stay at the table as Democrats, continue to exert what they want more and more over the next few weeks and months, really.
Now, he's part of this group called the Coalition of the Willing. That's what Senator Baucus, the chair of the committee, has called it. Is that still a focal point of negotiations between the Democrats and the Republicans?
It is in the Finance Committee. I mean, it still is the last place where Republicans or Democrats are sitting at the table together for the most part. And they will be back this week trying to come up. They're the core of the working group in the Finance Committee trying to come up with a bill. And, of course, all those members are going to have to go back to their respective parties and their caucuses to try to get sign-off. But a lot of the writing of the bill right now is concentrated with these seven senators.
Jeff, you heard Vice President Biden give an interview over the weekend, I think when he was still in Iraq, about his view of how this could play out politically. What was it that caught your ear?
Well, while we're all rightly paying attention to the process that's taking place right now in Congress, the House will start marking up its bills, the HELP Committee will finish its markup at some point, and the Finance Committee sometime soon had better come out with a bill. From the White House's perspective, and I think a lot of people on the left are counting on this too, what Vice President Biden said was that the president is not going to get personally involved in the negotiations over individual policy points in the bill, such as whether to have a public plan as part of the health insurance exchange, until after the House and Senate pass their original versions, and then go into the conference committee to hash out the final product. This is something I think everyone sort of maybe figured, but it was telling that the vice president came right out and said as much. And it matches the strategy that the president has used on, I think, a lot of other bills as well, such as the stimulus. From the liberal perspective, and I've heard, you know, little hints at this from people, especially those in the Senate, who support the public plan, support some of the more liberal policies in there, may be concerned about what's coming out of the Finance Committee. And what they can look at now is, well, the House will have a public plan. The House will have a Medicaid expansion. The Senate Help Committee will have a public plan and some other things that they like to see. The president keeps saying he supports those things. So even if what comes out of the Finance Committee, or indeed the Senate itself, doesn't include some of those provisions, I think they feel pretty confident that they'll win out in the end, provided they can get through the next 5 weeks and actually get to that point where the House and Senate have passed bills, especially once President Obama steps in and tells members of Congress, members of his own party, this is what I want. I'm standing
because
here.
Because he hasn't done that yet.
He hasn't
really
done it yet. But I think what the vice president made clear is that he plans to. And now we know when. And I think that's noteworthy. And I think that also sends a signal. It sends a signal to liberals in the Senate in particular that the president is with you. And I think it sends a signal to Republicans, again, in the Senate in particular, that there will come a point at which the president is going to assert himself. And I should also add that if you are a centrist Democrat, whether you're in the House or the Senate, you probably knew this already, but now you know that the president is going to come to you at some point, if the House and Senate pass their bills, and say, I know there may be things about this that you're not comfortable with, but are you with me or not? And that's, I think it's going to be hard for even those centrist Democrats that have said, we don't like public plan, we don't like these other things, to tell the president no in his first year in office on his first major domestic initiative.
On the flip side, for the progressive end of the party too, or they're going to have to, if this comes to a point where the shape of the bill doesn't satisfy them, because there's as much problems the moderates have as progressives, and the president will have to exert himself on the progressives and say, you may not be getting everything you want, but do you want to scuttle this whole thing if you don't get the strongest public plan that you envision? So, I mean, we're all kind of looking for when the president will do that. And I think that's why those comments were telling.
You know, in these conversations, we always talk about or allude to the timeline, the timing of all of this. Why is that so important to this debate and how it eventually will resolve itself?
Because it's always so difficult to pull these things together. Senate Finance, as we know, has not produced their bill. We're talking about probably 2 weeks of floor time on the Senate floor to get this done. If they're going to have a bill, members of that committee, in particular the Republicans, want to see a full score from the Congressional Budget Office before they mark up that package. All these things take time. So if you look at the calendar, we've got about 4 to 5 weeks. The Senate is in a week longer. They're in the first week of August. The House is not. The Senate has got to start moving things if they want the bill done before the August recess. The House is likely to pass its version before the August recess. And then you have to have time for this thing called the conference committee when they come back, when members of the House and Senate get together.
And the conventional wisdom, again, sticking with this timeline discussion, is that the longer it goes on, the more you risk the Christmas tree syndrome, people adding more and more ornaments, more and more things to help them and their constituents. And also, the president doesn't want it to go on too long because who knows what will happen to his honeymoon period, how long that will last.
Yeah, I mean, and even just looking to November, after the first week in November, you sort of shift into pretty hardcore, you know, midterm election politicking.
Right, right.
And as much as then that complicates things severely. So we hear about October 15th is when the president wants this bill, and that's for a reason. It gives him enough time ahead of when people start really campaigning and shifting towards the 2010 election. That will complicate everything. And you're right. I mean, the longer this drags out for the president, it's harder. It becomes a little bit easier for the opposition to build and sharpen their message. And I mean, the Democrats have, you know, specifically not put out too much detail on their bills. The Finance Committee didn't put out the full scope of what they were looking at before the July recess for this very reason, which is the more you get out there, the easier it's going to be to develop opposition messages and attack it and weaken it. So that's what we're saying.
If I may. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
From the president's perspective, he also needs a thing to actually sell. Mm-hmm. You know, this is such an enormous issue. And as people always point out, unlike, you know, you could look at other big issues like energy and climate change and stuff like that. This affects every single person basically every day. So it has to be a presidential initiative. And if the Congress goes into recess in August and there's 3 weeks of silence here in Washington on this stuff, and the president doesn't have a narrower set of things to try to sell to the public, and then, you know, into September and October, he needs a bill to tell people this is what it does, this is why it's good. So if this lingers around too long with all this uncertainty, the president has to continue to be somewhat vague. Talk about principles and talk about and get, you know, pinned down to specific controversial issues instead of being able, again, to sell the public on his package. And, you know, what a lot of members of Congress have said to me, and I've seen it reported everywhere on the Democratic side, is this needs to be the president's bill, not ours. And until there's a bill, it can't be.
And Carrie, you wrote an interesting article that was posted today about a memo from a centrist organization about how to shape the debate that Jeff was talking about. Are we going to start hearing it, healthcare reform, described in a slightly different way?
I think what Third Way argued in this memo, they did a large poll, Obama's pollster, mm-hmm. Did the polling, and they stepped back a little bit. President Obama has talked about cost, quality, affordability. Those are kind of his three principles. And the memo argued that you need to actually be a little bit more visceral and develop or sort of draw out a more emotional response from people. Those are very computational words. You know, Dr. Mr. Spock words for a Dr. Spock debate was what they said about it. So they argued that you need to build this argument around the idea of stability, creating stability for the middle class. And in addition to talking about, it should sort of be the umbrella over the debate in terms of trying to get buy-in from the middle class, who are concerned that it whatever happens will help somebody else, not them. They generally support reform, but when it comes to wanting it, the case isn't being made that they will personally benefit. And Third Way argues that you need to sell them on the idea of stability, that we are going to keep the costs low, that you won't have to worry about losing your job, and talk about, and it argues that the lawmakers and the president should provide that more emotional argument for people, so they move from just saying generally they like it to actually buying in and believing that this package will provide something for them, and just not covering 47 million uninsured people, which generally has been the focus of the president and lawmakers. But they need to sort of reshape the debate. And already the House Democratic Caucus has incorporated this into their talking points. They did that ahead of the recess. And also told that the president, given that it's his pollster that did a lot of this survey.
We'll begin hearing it more and more?
We might.
Okay.
We'll look
for
it.
One final question to you, Mary Agnes, and that is, apart from what's going on Capitol Hill, the White House is negotiating with the hospital industry to come up with a cost savings plan. Describe where things stand with that and how that tracks with what is happening on the Hill.
Right. The negotiations are ongoing. Both sides appear very close to an agreement that would reduce government payments through Medicare and Medicaid to hospitals by about $160 billion over the next decade. A key thing here under discussion is the phase-in of the cuts. Both of the hospitals get these things called disproportionate share or DSH payments to help cover the care they provide to the uninsured people. And as more and more Americans get health insurance, the thought is that that's how those DSH payments could sort of slide down and be reduced over time. So it's a very interesting thing to watch because you do have everything going on Capitol Hill. Both all the committees of jurisdiction will come up with their own list of what they call pay-fors. They'll want certain things out of the hospital industry. They'll want certain things out of the health insurers, out of the drug industry. But separately, those industries have been negotiating with the White House to come up with their own list of savings cuts that are out there and that can help pay for health reform. Because as we all know, the message has been with Democrats and President Obama, not only do we want to expand coverage, we want to make sure that we pay for it as well.
Okay, that's the final word today. Thank each and every one of you. Appreciate it. And thank you very much for watching. I'm Jackie Judd.